on or discuss, and really I'm hopeful that we will, most of my classes will be more of a discussion, is I want to talk about the power of an invitation. The power of an invitation. I wanted us to think about, and hopefully this will spur on our thoughts about this topic. But when you think about an invitation, you think about something that's special. So if you think about an invitation, you know, my mind was revolved around something that's special or unique that you feel like is happening maybe just for you or a small group. Or you might get an invitation, it might be dreadful. How many of you have had it, don't raise your hand, but an invitation to go to a wedding and you didn't really want to go to the wedding? Or you're thinking, I have other things to do. So an invitation can be a great thing, but it also can be something you might not look forward to. They either will make you feel special and wanted and accepted, or it might make you feel the opposite. So I want us to think about that this morning as we talk about this. But I do think an invitation is a powerful way to reach others, or a powerful way to reach out to others. And that is, I want you to think about, so those of you who are married, and maybe this is many, many years ago, or for some it might not be too long ago, but think about the last time you were invited out on a date. So I see some of you really thinking back a long time ago. But think about how special you felt when you were invited on that date. Made you feel good, right? Made you feel excited, looking forward to that. Maybe as a business person, you were invited out to lunch. You had an invitation to go to lunch or something very, very small and at the time maybe not that big of a deal or maybe not that meaningful, but an invitation to maybe go out for lunch, maybe to go get together to go golfing, maybe to do something else. It was nice, right? Well, think about the last time you had some friends invite you over for a meal or a get-together. Maybe it was something very informal, like they just ran into you and they invited you over, or it was something really formal and you got an actual invitation in the mail or an email, or maybe today we would say maybe a text message. Maybe that was even more, I guess, formal than running into you. Or think about a time where maybe you didn't have a place to have a Thanksgiving meal, or you knew you were going to be at home. Or you didn't have any plans yourself, and someone invited you to come over and spend Thanksgiving with them. How special did that make you feel? Or how excited did that make you feel? So that's what I want us thinking about today, is I really want us to get our minds thinking about an invitation in that way. And we're going to look at an invitation or invitations in the Bible. We're going to look at those that were extended by God and Jesus, and then we're going to look at those invitations that were extended by just individuals. So let's first look at where God had invited others. So I've got some verses that I'll be reading, and then I've got some verses that I want help with later. But God invited sinners. And did he invite just a small group, a little sect of people, or did he invite all? We know he invited all. Isaiah 1, 18 and 19 says, "Come now and let us reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they will be as white as snow. They are red like crimson. They shall be as wool. If you are willing and obedient, you shall eat the good of the land." So here we have him inviting everybody. And what really is the invitation about? What did this invitation really give people an opportunity of? Well, first of all, it's not a narrow invitation like we would think of an invitation. You know, if I invited Ben and Emily over to eat with us, it'd be different than if I said, we'd like the whole congregation to come over. Well, God here is inviting everyone. And he's inviting those who have sinned. Well, that's all of us. And he is giving them something. And I think this is the interesting part about an invitation, is there's a benefit here. Well, it's not just that you can have your sins removed, but they can become white as snow. And even though they were red like crimson, they will be like wool. And then it's kind of interesting. His invitation has a contingency. I don't know. I was thinking about invitations. You know, somebody might invite you over and say, well, bring something with you, or bring a side, or maybe something, but not maybe nothing, you know, very specific, or maybe you didn't feel like you had to do that, or you couldn't come over. But there is a contingency here. There is something specific that has to happen. If you are willing and obedient, then you shall eat the good of the land. So, those who accept this invitation must be willing and obedient. Okay, what else does God do? Well, He invites the destitute. Isaiah 55, 1 through 3, it says, "Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come buy and eat. Yes, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. You do... Why do you spend money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and let your soul delight itself in abundance. Incline your ear and come to me. Hear, and you, your soul shall live, and I will make everlasting covenant with you, the sure mercies of David." So, again, and I know these things seem obvious, but what exactly is the invitation here? Who's the invitation to, specifically in this one?
Everyone who thirsts.
Yeah, everyone who thirsts. And are we talking about this physical thirst? Okay. So, we're not talking about that. So, what are these people thirsty for?
The truth.
The truth, right. So, they're thirsty for the truth, and I think these are, and the reason I'm asking these elementary questions is because I think today, what we're going to bring this around to here in a minute is we're going to see how God and Jesus did it, then we're going to see how others did it, and then we're going to try to figure out how can we maybe do it better today than we're doing. Did these people have money? No. He points out that you don't have to have money. You don't have to have money, and even if you do have money, that's okay. If you're thirsty, you know, come to me. He offers life. He offers everlasting life. So He offers something that's pretty good, right? So when you think about His invitation, it's obviously probably a little bit different than what we can offer today. So if I, you know, invite Eric and Amanda over, I can't give them anything that special. Might be able to give them a meal. Maybe they could come to the pool. Maybe they could relax. Maybe we could watch their kids for them. I mean, we could do some fun things. But I can't give you everlasting life. And there's a pretty big difference, right? I mean, the offer is dramatically different than maybe what we can personally, individually offer. But we're going to get to that in a minute. Okay, now we're going to see how Jesus invites the weary and heavy laden. Matthew chapter 11, verse 28 through 30. "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle, lowly in heart, and you will find rest in your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Quite an invitation, isn't it? So, what would these burdens that were so heavy, what would those burdens be to them at that time? What was going on during this time? And maybe I'll specifically ask, what did the scribes and maybe the Pharisees do that would make this burden so difficult for people?
Well, the old law was a burden which they weren't really even keeping anymore, but the scribes and the Pharisees bound all these customs of men on them that were extremely burdensome and tedious, and no one could really keep them.
Yeah. Okay, good point.
And then those that bound them on other people, they didn't keep them.
Yeah, which would have been really bothersome, right? So you've got these people who are holding you accountable to something that you know is difficult to do, and then you look at them and they're not doing it themselves. So that'd be quite a heavy burden, not only mentally, but physically. Was somebody going to say something? I thought I heard something. So I think, you know, when you think about this invitation that we read of right there, you think of how nice that would have been to realize, hey, I've got this burden that is heavy and heavy laden, and someone is offering me rest. And they're telling me that their yoke is going to be easy, and we can go into the whole, what is a yoke? And But I know most of us know and understand that. But someone's offering that he's going to be gentle, lowly, easy, and that you will find rest in your souls. And that had to be important to them, right? So, again, as we read these, think about today. Does this still apply? Can we still make, can we still make an offer to someone or an invitation to someone that will help make their burdens light and easy? All right, so be thinking about that. All right, so offering spiritual rest for those who are willing to become disciples. So the Holy Spirit invited those. Revelation chapter 22 and 17, it says, "And the Spirit and the bride say, come. And let him who hears say, come. And let him who thirsts, come. Whoever desires, let him take the water of life freely." So here we have an example of the Spirit, Holy Spirit inviting, or an invitation. So this invitation is a desire for the water of life, and we see that God's message is often in the form of an invitation. That's often what we would read of His messages being. So it's not too big of a surprise that servants of God would often reach out in that same fashion, right? So let's look at some human invitations here quickly. As prophesied, I'll read this one and then I'll ask for help. In Isaiah chapter 2, verse 13, we see where Isaiah prophesied here. It says, "The word that Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of God of Jacob. He will teach us His ways, and we will shall walk in His paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." So here we have Isaiah with an invitation here. So let's, if I can get some help, someone turn to John chapter 1 and verses 40 through 42. And then following that up, someone turn to John chapter 1, verses 43 through 46. And then someone John chapter 4, verses 28 through 30. And I'll do one more. Luke chapter 5, verses 27 through 29. Okay, so let's look at some of these invitations. And again, be thinking about what can we learn from these. Somebody have John chapter 1, verses 40 through 42.
"One of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first found his own brother Simon and said to him, 'We have found the Messiah,' which is translated the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus. Now when Jesus looked at him, he said, 'You are Simon, the son of Jonah. You shall be called Cephas.'"
Okay. So I know we're going back early here, right? But so Andrew here invited Peter. And what was really the invitation to do? It just in very general form, what was it? It was just to meet Christ, right? It was just a very general invitation to meet. We found this individual. Now, why don't you come meet him with us? All right, who's got verses 43 through 46 there in John?
"The following day, Jesus wanted to go to Galilee, and he found Philip and said to him, 'Follow me.' Now, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, 'We have found him whom Moses in the law and the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph.' And Nathanael said to him, 'Did anything good come out of Nazareth?' Philip said to him, 'Come and see.' And Jesus said, Nathanael, and Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said of him, 'Behold, an Israelite indeed in whom is no deceit.' Nathanael said, 'How do you know me?' Jesus answered and said to him, 'Before Philip called you, you were under the fig tree. I saw you.'"
That's probably good. Yeah, that's probably good. Did you get through 46?
Yeah,
that's okay. Yeah, you're good. You're good. But yeah, and there, that's a good story, and we can continue on. But I just wanted to get the gist of Philip inviting Nathanael to meet him, right? And then we see that not only did he invite him to meet him, then and Ben was going to go on and read the story, then we have that meeting, right? Who's got John chapter 4, verses 28 through 30?
"He went left her water pot, went her way into the city, and said to the men, "Come see a man who told me all things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ?" Then they went out of the city and came to him.
Okay. So here we have this Samaritan woman, and she goes out, and who does she invite? Her neighbors. She invites them to just to see and understand about Jesus. All right, someone has Luke chapter 5, verse 27 through 29. Anybody get that? And while we're turning to that, somebody wants to go to Acts chapter 10, verse 24.
Levi gave him a great feast in his own house, and there were a great number of tax collectors and others descending on him.
Okay, so what did Levi do? He gives an invitation, but what's he do with his invitation? He has people over. We're going to have a feast. And so this introduction was going to be a feast at his house, but have you ever been invited? I think back to someone that was trying to start up a new business, and they had invited about 10 people over to their house. It kind of makes me think of that a little bit, but I knew real quick after we got there that I didn't want to be part of the business deal, and we moved on. But you know, this would have created a lot of interest and excitement, and you can only imagine what this dinner was that Levi hosted. Okay, let's look at Cornelius. Someone have Acts chapter 10, verse 24? Acts 10 and 24.
And the following day they entered Caesarea. Now Cornelius was waiting for them and had called together his relatives and close friends.
Okay, and then when you read verse 33, one more.
So I sent to you immediately, and you have done well to come. Now therefore we are all present before God to hear all the things commanded you by God.
Okay, so who did Cornelius invite? Did he invite just his family? No. He invited family and friends. And so we see, and I'm sure there's tons of invitations that we could go look at, but these seem relatively, and this is the point, and this is what I want us to get from this, is they seem relatively simple. There was nothing elaborate about them. It was, some of them seemed spur of the moment. Some of them may have been thought out, but it was just an invitation. Hey, we started out by looking at Andrew, who had just learned of the one. And Jesus, and what's he do? He invites others to come and see him. And Philip, kind of the same thing, where he invited Nathaniel. But they were innocent, seemingly small, but like, hey, Eric, let's go. Come on, let's go meet the one. Invitations. And so I think we're going to get into this, but I think sometimes we can overcomplicate an invitation, right? So, the power of the invitation. So we've seen it work. We saw it work with Jesus, or God. We know it worked. We could see where thousands had accepted an invitation. We've seen it work with disciples. We saw it work with just some individuals who made that happen. And so we too can make an invitation work. And this is what I want to spend the remaining 20 minutes talking about. And it's really just an open discussion by us. But when you think about an invitation, let's think back to when you had your wedding invitations. So those ladies that are in the audience, you probably think back of how much painstaking time you took. You picked out the script, what kind of paper it was going to be on, and then together you had to think about who all was going to be invited. But there was a lot that went into that, right? It wasn't you just sit down and you said, we'll just throw this thing together, throw it out in the mail and hope people come. You probably put an RSVP in it. You may have had your own little card in there that you put your own stamp on, and you RSVP had a place for someone to respond, because you need to know, are we going to have 20 there? Are we going to have 200? Are we going to have 300? But there was a lot of time and effort and energy that went into that, right? And I'm going to tell you that I think that our energy in thinking about inviting others should be a lot of pre-thought, right? Do I think that it's important about the piece of paper? No. The script that's on it, the type of font that's on it, I don't think so. But I do think we need to think about how the invitation should go, who it is that we should invite, and I'll give you my thoughts here, and then I want to open this up. But spur-of-the-moment invites are just fine. And I think we're going to talk about how I think they are beneficial and they're useful. And I don't think we should shy away from them. But I think if you were to sit down today and think about in a coming year, or let's even say just closing out this year. So here we are. It's the second day of the month, September. How many people would you like to invite to come to church with you between now and the end of the year? Don't think about years, but is there anybody, whether it's your family, you got somebody in your own family right now that's not following Christ, maybe they've put it off, they're not interested, or you've got coworkers, man, these are good people. So-and-so's a good person. I wonder if they go to church, or I wonder why they don't go to church. And you got all, so you think about individually, you've got neighbors that you know that really need to be invited to come to church. And maybe you haven't just come right out and invited them, right? So this is what I want to talk about today. And like I say, now we've got 15 minutes left. But what I want to talk about is, why do we think our invitations sometimes don't work? We saw where they do work. Why do we think they don't work, and what can we do to maybe make them better? And so in the 15 minutes we've got left, I want to talk about openly as a class, what can we do to do a better job with our invitations? So I'll just pause for a second and open it up there. Maybe let's talk about why do we think we have trouble today, or they don't work as well? Anybody have any thoughts on maybe why we struggle with our invitations?
A lot of people are set in their ways. When I was up at the golf course, I asked one of the co-workers, we were talking about church, and I told him where I went and stuff, and he said, you will never see me set foot in a church ever. And I said, I didn't really know where to go.
Yeah. Okay. So your invitation was quickly rejected, and then to prove a point, really made it, okay, a stand on I'll never go. Okay. We can maybe talk about that a little bit. That's kind of an awkward scenario. Like you say, where do you go from that? Because you feel pretty much from the onset, there's no interest there.
Right. And it was the type of person that you know was living a non-Christian life.
Yeah. And I will say this, and I don't want to get, you know, too deep in each individual one, but, you know, I think a follow-up question, and it's always awkward at that time because you're thinking, ooh, but is why? Why would he never step foot in a church? And that might have opened the door, because I'm sure he would have said something about, oh, they're hypocritical, or, you know, on and on and on it goes. But it might create a little something where you can... I'm sure he was probably bold in that statement because he thought, I'm going to make it to where you don't want to ask me any follow-up questions. And it worked.
Right.
Okay. Ben, looked like you had your hand up.
We can't compartmentalize our life to where an invitation would seem strange from a person. Right?
Yeah.
The contrast there is that you're part of your normal life is exhibiting that you're a Christian.
Yeah.
And so then when you offer an invitation, people aren't surprised by it.
Yeah.
You think about the last time you got a surprise invitation. But, you know, you're not really thinking about the event. You're thinking about, this is a surprise invitation. How do I get out of it?
That's right.
I just a thought.
Yeah. Yeah, good thought. And I've got a couple of thoughts. How many, well, through work, have you been invited to go do something with a coworker that you didn't want to do? You know, and it's like, oh my word, what, you know, and the invite maybe to go to a bar or go out and do, you know, whatever. And you're thinking, how did you not know that that would be a no? You'll never see me in a bar, you know, that kind of thought. Tad? Yeah, where they're at
in
their life.
I'm guessing a lot of people are like me, where we talk ourselves out of even offering an invitation because we've already decided to get rejected anyway. Probably not the right approach.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think, and when I was putting this together, I think we allow ourselves to jump to conclusions because we think there's no way. I mean, that they just... You know, like Matt's coworker, there's just no way they would do that because we kind of know the person they are. But we don't know what might be happening that would cause them to accept that. And all we're looking for is a crack, right? Because you never know if they would take you up on that or even cause them to think something else may come along. Mike, and then we'll go to Maverick.
I was going to say, I've had people tell me when I invite them, you know, that, well, I know people in your church. They don't live any different than I do. Why should I go to church?
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, what do you say to that? Well, the only thing you can say is, well, if that's true, then those people aren't living the way they should be.
Right.
You know, or I had a guy tell me one time, well, you know, I'm not good enough to go to church. I need to be perfect before I go to church.
Yeah.
Well, that's an easy one.
That's a good one. Yeah. That gives us a whole perfect opportunity, doesn't it? Yeah. That hypocritical thing is a big one, and I think to your point, a lot of people love to use that. Jay and I've talked about family members who throw the hypocrite. Well, people act a certain way, and so I'm not going to go to church. And that stumbling block is something I think for us to try to talk through, but it's difficult. Maverick, and then back to Ted.
Yeah. I kind of two things. One, I feel like a lot of times we overthink it. We overcomplicate whenever we try to invite someone. And part of that probably comes from the fact a lot of times someone won't accept it because they kind of want to know what they get out of
sure.
it.
Sure.
There's a big sense of entitlement thing. So, what do I get out of this? I feel like it's a big reason why if they don't feel like they get something out of it, they don't accept.
Well, if you think about it, if you're not a Christian, you wouldn't understand the benefits, right? So to your point, you know, some of these invitations did have an immediate benefit. Levi, when he threw a party, well, I'm sure people thought, well, this is great. I get free food and I'm going to be taken care of and entertained. I can't wait to go to that one, right? But to others, they wouldn't understand. They don't get the benefit, and that's the difficult part. And a lot of these were whimsical. I think you're exactly right. We try to maybe think it up, and it's got to be perfect, and we needed this perfect opportunity. Were any of these perfect?
Wait, we think we need a word in this or add this
yeah.
to it so that it appeals to them.
Right. These were pretty simple invitations. Hey, come! Look who I found. Look who I saw. You need to come see him. Yeah, Tad.
Well, kind of to that point, if there's one thing we should be calculated about, it is what we're inviting them to.
Right.
I don't know that just inviting someone to church is really the right message for most people. I mean,
yeah, I've got a couple bullets here, and I think inviting them to maybe study or talk about
yeah.
Jesus way before.
I mean, you think of the conversions in the Bible, if one single time where that was how the conversation started. You know, there's probably a place for that, but
yeah.
I'm going to guess that for most people, that's not quite the right invitation.
Well, how uncomfortable would that be for? We got to put ourselves in their shoes. If you aren't living the life that you know you should be living, and someone says, "Come to church with me," that would be awkward, right? So, no different than it'd be awkward for us to show up at a bar. I mean, you got to think that's the exact dichotomy: is we're asking them to come into a church in a building where there's other people who are trying to be saints, and they're thinking, "I'm a long way from that. Why would I do that?" So, yeah. Then we'll go back. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just, as an example, I have a friend at work who is kind of atheist, kind of agnostic.
Yeah.
He didn't need to come to church. He just needed to talk about God.
Yeah.
That's what he needed to start with.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just depends on the person, what the invitation they need.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it needs to be personal, and I think we have to tailor that to what's going on in that scenario. James, you had a thought?
Yeah, I had a couple.
Okay.
Remember them all.
Okay, sorry.
Me personally, a lot of people have heard me say that I think that the main purpose of church is to strengthen Christians. I think a lot of our evangelism and outreach happens on an all one-to-one or personal
yeah.
basis, family to family. That's just the way I see it. I've had a lot more success with that than inviting somebody to church because you never know what the speaker is choosing to speak on, for one thing. And sometimes that can be, if they're not prepared to hear that talk,
yeah.
then sometimes that can be offensive. But
yeah.
to the point about the, I know people in the church, and I invited a guy, a co-worker one time to a church, and we were going to be meeting at Martinstown, and he knew a guy that went to Martinstown, and he goes, I remember him, I know his history. And I said, you know what? The church is a place where sinners hang out.
Yeah.
To get better. And you yeah. know his past, but do you know what he's doing now? Do you know what he's trying to do now with his life?
Yeah.
He had a pretty messed up life. And we all know people who have come to Christ who lived unperfect lives.
Yeah.
Look at us. And so I tried to get across the point that I said, everybody in the building has got problems. We're
yeah.
all trying to work through. It's kind of like going to an AA meeting. I mean,
yeah.
that's where alcoholics
we're all a work in progress, yeah. Yeah, I think we just, we have to remember that, that maybe to the point, Tad, you make, is that, that coming to church may not be the perfect first invitation, right? The, and I had in my notes here, and I was going to talk about that, what do we think a good invitation looks like? And I think to your point, it's individual, it's maybe family to family, it's maybe to study and talk about Jesus, not maybe the first thing to come to church. You, yeah.
And again, one more comment. At the Baptist church where I came from, the pastor's son married a Mormon woman. Mormon woman. And so there were, we had a lot of discussion about statistics. And the statistics on Mormons converting people was somewhere around 70% because they invited people to a meal in their homes. And they, she said the reason that it was so appealing was because they made you feel like part of the family. Mm. And there's so many people in this world today that don't have a strong family structure that it, she said that's why they're so successful.
Wow. Okay. It's good to know.
You know, the interesting thing about some of the conversions that you pointed out, many of them began with a relationship
yeah.
first.
Yep. A brother. Or, yeah. Right. Yeah. Or a friend.
And,
close friend.
We need to be careful to not wait too long.
Yeah.
But also not... think that that's the first thing we got to do is say, hey,
yeah.
let's have a Bible
yeah.
study, or hey, let's have you come to services with me. You got to develop that relationship first.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's an important point. And to your point, there's a fine line between just continuing to hang out with a sinner or somebody that we shouldn't be hanging with, but also befriending them enough to know that we can make a personal invite. Mike, were you somebody over here? No. Matt.
I was going to say something.
Yeah.
An older lady, lost her husband to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another approach. You know, some people might look at the church a certain way, but this woman looked at God a certain way.
Oh, because she
said, I'm not on speaking terms with God.
Because she took, or he took her husband.
Apparently they prayed a bunch over this, and she lost her husband to cancer, and so now she was playing the blame game. And
yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's that was years ago.
Yeah.
Many people do that.
Yeah.
The problem is they just don't have the knowledge and understand.
Yeah.
What they need to understand about God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in those cases, you know, obviously it sounds like she might have been a God fearing person. I mean, why were you praying? So we'd be bringing it back to that discussion and help her to understand. And so all good points. I had just mentioned, and we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left, but I had wrote down in my notes here that we need to make the gospel easy to understand. And I don't mean water it down. I just mean make it easy to understand. And I was thinking about how we might use terms or speak in terminology that others may not understand. And we can't do that. We all know that we started with milk, right? And so if we start trying to force feed steak, it's not going to go well. And so we need to make sure we do that. And then I think discussing with them what faith really means. What is it to have faith? What does that look like? And making sure you talk about that. The other thing is that I had down is just, I think from an invitation, is allowing others to speak and respond. Making sure we give opportunity for them to be able to open up and, you know, talk about things. And, you know, Matt, to that one right there, who knows where that could have gone, you know, down the road, right? More conversation. And sometimes we don't have the chance, you know. Maybe it never gets to come up again, or maybe they move on, or they don't want to talk about it. But it's those invitations or those conversations that will then lead to other things.
You said this before, know, when you invite someone to talk about God or come to church or a spiritual discussion, they need to know what it's about before they get involved.
Yeah.
I remember once when Linda and I, we had been married but maybe a couple of years maybe, got a phone call from this guy that we went to school with. He was older than me, and I wasn't really acquainted with him that good, but Linda knew his wife pretty good. Anyway, he said, well, we'd like to take you guys out to eat. You got something we want to talk about?
Huh.
I said, well, what is it? He said, well, let's just go out and eat, and we'll talk about it. And I'm like, well,
yeah.
Yeah, we'd like to go out and eat. What's it about? Well, we'll tell you. So we go to Branson to eat, and he springs it on us. He wants to sell us Amway. Well, he didn't tell us because he didn't figure we'd go.
Right.
If we
right.
knew what it was about.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, we need to be
yeah.
up front with people.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that goes back to that apprehensive, you like you said, apprehensive invitation. You get it and you're like, well, what's going on here? And he knew. He knew if he told you, it's about Amway, you'd have
like
said.
Like Ben said, you know, our life should be such that, you know, when we say we'd like to talk with you about God or Christ, then that really, that should be all that,
right.
They ought to know from that.
That's right. Yeah, it can be very, very simple. Okay, yeah, Eric.
I guess as an observation, it seems like as a people, we're losing the art of communication.
Yeah, we'd rather text.
the ways that we communicate today have, I think, eroded some of the better
abilities
and platforms to share the gospel.
Yeah.
I think we've gotten worse at communicating
with
people and talking about important things.
Yeah. Well, and I will tell you this, you know, for those of you who have people that either work for you or you've had to either discipline or you have them, you know, so many levels below and they have to discipline somebody, they hate that. Nobody likes the discipline, but I'm saying there are people that will go completely out of their way to have those tough, difficult conversations or coaching opportunities. And it's why? Because we don't communicate anymore. We just don't. And we struggle. I had a lady ask me, she had the audacity to ask me, do you think I could text her to let her know that she's going on an action plan? I'm like, no, that's not a good approach. But that's because she didn't even want to talk about the action plan. So I think to your point, if you struggle with some of those things, you're going to struggle to do an invite for sure. Good point. All right, we are out of time. Any last second comments before we wrap up this one?